Good morning. This is Long Island Morning Edition on 88.3 WLIW-FM, heard across the East End on 96.9 FM in Western Suffolk. I'm Michael Mackey. Adding yet another layer to attempts to ensure that the massive Amazon hub planned for the Hamptons Business District does not increase traffic at Francis S. Gabreski Airport in West Hampton Beach, Suffolk County Legislator Al Krupski is calling for additional oversight. His bill, co-sponsored by Suffolk County Legislator Bridget Fleming, would require a vote of the full legislature before anyone can seek to change operations at the airport. Kitty Merrill reports on 27East.com that a public hearing will be held in Hopog next Tuesday, July 26th, on a charter law requiring the airport manager to seek legislative approval before making any request to the FAA for any operational certification amendments. The West Hampton Airport is a county-owned facility, and said Krupski, it certainly affects my district. The North Fork legislator and farmer reported a marked increase in air traffic during the pandemic. He'd see the planes and helicopters over his pumpkin farm in Peconic. Online retail giant Amazon recently built a mammoth structure in the Hampton Business District at Gabreski to serve as its last-mile hub for deliveries. While the Southampton Town Planning Board conditioned its approval on a prohibition of aviation uses by Amazon, and the town board also revised its planned development district legislation for the industrial park to add a ban on air cargo uses, we're very concerned about the uses there could change, said Krupski, since the FAA is involved. Remember, that hearing is next Tuesday, July 26th, 9:30 a.m. The proposed zoning code amendment to govern firearm businesses in Riverhead has no town board support, according to Supervisor Yvette Aguiar, who also ranted against gun regulation laws as a way to curtail gun violence during the board's meeting yesterday. Alec Lewis reports on RiverheadLocal.com that Aguiar said the legislation drafted by the Riverhead Town Attorney's Office, which had a public hearing with polarized opinions from the public last month, will not be voted on or discussed unless a board member puts it forward. Board members agreed during the conversation that the code went too far. In the words of Councilman Frank Birot, board members said during the hearing last month that the code did not come from any board members or the town's code revision committee, where town officials discussed proposed changes to the town code. Aguiar responded to a question posed by a Northville resident, Kathy McGraw, who asked what the status of the amendment was. She said there was an outpouring from this community on the amendment and a real interest in this town in zoning for firearms business. None of the board members have indicated they want to move it forward, said Aguiar, and the purpose of public hearings is to hear from the public and then maybe moving forward. Long Island ranked fourth among statewide utilities in the percentage of customers in arrears, with 111,101 PSEG residential ratepayers owing an average of $1,354 in past due bills as of March, according to State Controller Thomas DiNapoli. Mark Harrington reports on Newsday.com that the Controller's Office, while noting $250 million in state arrears forgiveness programs, said it supported further legislative and regulatory efforts to reduce the number of people in arrears. Long Island Electric customers made up about 9% of the 1.2 million customers statewide in arrears. Con Ed made up about 32%. The Southampton Town Board has accepted the developer's first draft of a full-scale environmental review of plans to develop 5 acres off County Road 39 in Southampton with 60 affordable rental units. Kitty Merrill reports on 27East.com that it's a major hurdle cleared for the proposal by the developer Concern Housing. Just about a year ago, the board issued a positive declaration under the State Environmental Quality Review Act. A POSDEC under CEQA means a project has the potential to have adverse impacts on the environment. It calls for the compilation of a detailed environmental impact statement. The Southampton Town Board last week accepted the draft document for the project renamed Liberty Gardens, the DEIS, allowing the next step, public review of that document, which is available on the Southampton Town website, and a public hearing. The hearing date is yet to be set. Normally, Southampton Town's planning board is the entity to look at or require a DEIS. But in this case, the developer needs a zone change from the town board before the proposal can go to the next stage of review. Concern is asking to change the existing residential zoning for the acreage, located behind the Southampton Full Gospel Church, that's on the south side of County Road 39, as you are heading eastbound approaching the 7-Eleven, to multifamily and increase the permitted density from 6 units per acre to 12. If the zone change is adopted, town planners will review the application to subdivide the church property to allow for the development, along with the details of the development itself. Suffolk County Executive Steve Ballone yesterday vetoed GOP-sponsored legislation to end the county's $2.6 million public campaign finance program, arguing the bill would exacerbate financial barriers, preventing candidates from running for office while providing special interests increased control of local government. Last month, the Republican-controlled legislature voted 11-4, with two Democrats and one Republican abstaining, to end the program, which establishes a 4-1 public match of campaign funds. Robert Brodsky reports on Newsday.com that the program, which was set to go into effect for the first time in the 2023 election cycle, also sets individual contribution limits and creates a campaign finance board. The program, approved in 2017 when Democrats ran the Suffolk County Legislature, would use revenue from the Suffolk Regional Off-Track Betting Corp to provide matching campaign funds to candidates running for county office who agree to fundraising parameters. Opponents contend the program uses county revenue to fund candidates that some taxpayers may not want to support. The state of New York has announced the launch of a new hotline for wage theft victims as part of ongoing efforts to combat cheating employers, efforts which have already recovered nearly $3 million in unpaid wages since the pandemic began. Victor Ocasio reports on Riverhead on Newsday.com that Governor Kathy Hochul said that starting yesterday, Long Islanders and other state residents who believe their employer may be illegally withholding wages can report wage theft to the State Department of Labor's new hotline by calling 833-910-4378. That's 833-910-4378. Language interpretation services should be available for those who need it. The Labor Department is also working on a $10 million online reporting tool. The Harbor Committee in Sag Harbor Village said no last year to a 23-foot dock planned for shallow Otter Pond Creek, but a New York State Supreme Court justice now says yes is the word. Peter Booty reports on 27East.com that with little explanation, Justice William J. Condom last week annulled the committee's decision to deny the application of Brian Graybill's Claxton House, LLC, to build a 23-foot dock in the narrow creek just west of Main Street at 8 John Street in Sag Harbor. The judge wrote that he had read Claxton House's petition asking the court to overrule the committee, as well as the village's opposition papers and supporting documents, that he also had heard the arguments presented by both sides. Without commenting on the merits of either side's case, the judge overruled the committee and directed it to approve the dock, which would be the first in the shallow waterway that connects Otter Pond with Upper Sag Harbor Cove through a culvert under Main Street. The Harbor Committee rarely votes to deny applications. Through the hearing process, the panel instead encourages applicants to modify problematic proposals. In the Claxton House case, neighbors had roundly opposed the dock as an eyesore and obstruction during nearly 2 years of on-again, off-again hearings on the application. So did board members, arguing that it would spoil a historic scenic view, that the creek was too shallow and narrow for a dock, that it would set a damaging precedent incident, leading to more docks in the fragile creek. Claxton House reps say that the dock, for which permits have been granted by the New York State Environmental Department of Conservation, were allowing it to go ahead. This has been Long Island Local News on Long Island's only NPR station, WLIW-FM. I'm Michael Mackey.